Captain Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And a good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and we are going to have ourselves, as usual, a wonderful, wonderful conversation. The show this evening, we'll break this into two. Last week, we had a very, very good interview with Mr. Hercude Estime, a young man who is on his way to becoming one of the legal professionals of the Bahamas. And hopefully, all things being equal, he will be one of those who will be recognized in future years. Very good conversation of overcoming, of struggle, of a number of challenges, but at the end of the day, triumphant so far in what he's doing with his life. And, you know, we were very grateful of that, to have had that interview. We were in the same space the following day, Friday, and a number of persons indicated that, you know, we listened, and some said that they were inspired. And so I guess work done. This evening, we're going to talk a bit about Africa. At the Afri-Exim Bank, the conference that we were in on the Friday. And then we will talk about some of the things that we've been observing around town, observing from Parliament, observing in terms of the discussions around announcements and so on and so forth. And, you know, we're going to share ideas. I have my view on the conference. I know my good friend, who is going to join me in a short while, have his own views, positive views. They all are some areas of potential critique. But we'll talk all about that right after our very quick break. If you want to join in other conversations this evening, it's going to be 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And I want you to not go away, just sit tight and come right back. We get right into the conference, talk about opportunities missed, what are some of the bright spots, what are some of the great things that we experience as a result of the Afri-Exim Bank conference coming to the Bahamas last week from Wednesday to Friday. From my perspective, it was a wonderful thing. But of course, there's always some areas in which we can improve. We'll talk a bit about them. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
On the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions.
Next Level Practical Solutions.
Solutions.
At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risks, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
All them black people that belong to Africa. So I saw we have a kid giddy and a hat.
Hey,
yeah. Oh. Hey. Calangola. Calangola. Up on them Africa. Gola. Calangola. Calangola, Calangola, Opasha Shamalang, Gola, Calangola. Me burn the fire from Babylon, not take no chat from Babylon. Cause a youth corrupt, the ghetto youth, we do no wicked act, we no Babylon. When me walk, I trample down Babylon, talk and ride down Babylon. Who know what we say here yeah, with your clans and plans? Wanna come trapping the man? Who no think who no can come take Mama Africa from me again? No, who no can come take Mama Africa from me again? Who no think who no can come take Mama Africa?
And welcome back to The Essentials as we listen to Jabouk's sing. Who no think who no can take Mama Africa from we again? Joining us on the live line is none other than C.A. Nuri. Welcome to The Essentials, Mr. Nuri. You there?
Be invited on your show. Thank you very much for the invite. It's been a while. I thought you was upset with me.
Yeah, I was upset with you, but you know, I think we've kind of settled, and we smoke a peace pipe, and now we're back here together, right?
I just want to reiterate that smoking is cause cancer.
Smoking is called cancer. Yeah, it depends on what you put inside it. Yeah. So
yes.
So you know, we are going to have a conversation like the good cousins that we are today.
Yes.
We want to talk a little bit about the conference. You were able to be there, consume some of it in multiple ways. Certainly, from my perspective, I spent the 3 days there. I wouldn't say the full time. I had to leave at some point. And in one instance, and I left early, didn't go to the concert. You know, it was kind of too cold for me at some point. I was kind of under the weather. But from what I experienced in the main hall, for the most part, listening to the presentations, listening to the various panels, it was a fantastic conference, really fantastic. It was different. It was refreshing. It was us talking to us about us. And, you know, the whole idea of Africa, global Africa, where the Caribbean is seen as a significant part. I think they call us the sixth section or segment, something to that effect. But, you know, it was really, in my mind, I think the best way of describing it, Nuri, was a bringing to life of many of the Pan-Africanist views that we would have heard going as far back as Marcus Garvey, listening to the sentiments which were espoused by Kwame Nkrumah, listening way later down to sentiments espoused by Nelson Mandela. it was, in a way, the coming together, the discussion about that, a reversal of the slave trade discussion, if you will, in terms of the direction. You know, what was your experience? What did you take away from that? What did you like? What did you not like?
It was a successful conference. I mean, I am a blogger, so I do critique, right? But it reminded me that no man is an island, putting a pun there in terms of the Bahamas and the Caribbean. No man is an island, and we all are part of the main, suggesting that we are, by extension, and clearly so, we are Africans, right? By the main, the majority of us in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleased to know that a hand was outstretched from the continent mm-hmm. to the Caribbean to say, come, let us break bread, let us trade, let us see opportunities. So for that alone,
mm-hmm.
I want to congratulate our government for volunteering that we will host this event.
Yes.
Right? And then and in terms of host and semantics, I would have to get more detail on what it means by host the event. Did we pay for the event? Did the African Afribank pay for the event, and mm-hmm. we just happened to have it in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean, to have them come here? But all of that, hopefully, in the future, mm-hmm. will be explained to us. And sometimes mm-hmm. we tend to ask too much questions, right? To say the devil's inside the details.
Yes, yes.
And leave the detail alone and ignore it mm-hmm. and ignore the expenses and just be satisfied that the event was successful.
I don't think you leave the questions alone. It can be much argument to believe, or much thinking to believe, that the government did pay some monies. They were part of the official logo banners and that type of a thing. So consequently, they may have paid. In my mind, if they did pay, and you look at the value which was created in terms of persons coming into the Bahamas, staying at the hotels, the opportunities which were created for networking, persons right here in the Bahamas meeting individuals from right across the breadth of Africa and the wider diaspora, the exposure to the way business is done, because there was a lot of showing off taking place at the conference, and I mean good showing off. Not only was there discussions on multiple topics, but they show you in real terms what the business of the bank was. And they literally announced billions of dollars. I don't know if it got to $2 or $3 billion. I don't think if it got to $3 billion, but it certainly was well above $1 billion, I think maybe above $2 billion. But, there was a number of deals which were announced, memorandum of understandings which were signed, and so on and so forth. And I thought that that was a good demonstrative way of saying to the Bahamas and to the Caribbean, this is what Africa, and in this instance, we being a part of that, this is what we can do for us.
And that is something to celebrate. And then also we need to remember that this was an extension for the entire Caribbean mm-hmm. and not necessarily just us. And I applaud the numerous announcements of memorandums of understanding and agreements, mm-hmm. right? I heard Barbados got one, the Bahamas got several, I think even Jamaica, I heard, got various announcements or mm. partnerships, and mm-hmm. that's something that we need to celebrate.
Yes.
But in all things, and in all narratives, there needs to be a complete story. And we need to understand from where it came, why it happened, so Bahamians can enjoy and to swallow
mm-hmm.
and salivate on what exactly happened here,
mm-hmm.
right, to have the full celebration. Yeah. So hopefully, in the future, when there is a recap, a rebroadcasting of the event, they'll tell a narrative of how we bid to host it, what was the expense we did, and then what happened and transpired during the 3-day event,
mm-hmm.
and then the conclusion of how we benefited. And all of that will make a wholesome conclusion where we say, this was a good thing,
and
make us all smile.
That would be useful. Just broadly speaking, Africa Exim is an institution which have private interests. So people invest in it. I think they also have a component of countries investing. And they certainly have an interest in the Caribbean. They have started by setting up a satellite office, which is set up in Barbados. That's where I think it all started. And so the Caribbean is on their mind. I can see, based on some of the overtures that were made, that the Bahamas is seem to be a sweet spot for them. They like the Bahamas. I think they were very, very blown away by the level of camaraderie and the level of accommodation that they received. Multiple persons mentioned that. I got at one point in time, I was thinking like, you know, what did you expect? But then again, you know, sometimes you have to kind of sit back and humble yourself and soak up when compliment is been given. I know they have a huge interest in Guyana, being oil and gas people out of certainly persons out of Nigeria, and you know, we had the benefit of seeing, you know, one of the richest man in Africa. I can't pronounce his name. Doug Dangote, who was there, made a presentation. I was impressed with his presentation. Great humility, great sense of, you know, knowing yourself. Yeah, I have tons of money, but willing to lay out the difficulties and the way he worked through stuff. And at the end of the day, to do so with a sense of humor, which, you know, very, very much humanized him. I thought, you know, it wasn't a personal interaction close, but I thought I enjoyed being in the presence of his voice. You know, it was inspirational for me.
It was definitely inspirational to see a billionaire in person and a billionaire walk amongst us in person, and somebody who actually looked like me. It was great to see so many different types of Bahamians in present. There were white Bahamians, Chinese Bahamians, Indian Bahamians who were present, and I assume some of them were international people there taking advantage of the opportunity of hearing, especially it being free. And few Bahamians realized that this was happening in the Bahamas, which was a concern for me.
Yeah, Yeah, I think there were multiple chairs in the room unused. I thought that was a little bit of a missed opportunity. I don't know who was responsible for it. I learned about it in a kind of roundabout ways, and if that was my circumstance, being someone who generally pays attention to these type of a thing, then I can understand it missing some other person. But it would have been good for me to have seen some children, some youngsters in the room, some UB in the room. We were chit-chatting earlier today. It would have been good to see some of the professors. They may have been there, I don't know. But certainly I would have loved to see one or two of the local professors on some of those panel discussions, you know, kind of bring in the type of academic flavor and fervor, which would then kind of, you know, benefit from some cross-fertilization, and then they would then in turn report that to us, whether through radio or writing or whatsoever. But, you know, I think there were one or two missed spaces. I was also really disappointed, Nuri. I didn't see anybody, not one soul I could recognize as an opposition member.
Were they invited?
I don't know. That's not my business.
I'm
not getting into that.
Bahamas.
No. I'm not getting into that with you.
No, you don't want to talk about it. I'll talk about it for 30 seconds.
My point, though, is I didn't see them there.
Because they weren't invited.
Yeah, okay. So they weren't invited. And
okay,
if they weren't invited, that would be that's a tragedy. I think given the nature of the conference and given what was being done and who were there, in the interest of country, the wider Bahamas, they should have been there.
Yeah, and then we go on to talk with semantics. If there was a need for an official invitation, being that they are co-Bahamians and people know that it was happening, they could have just showed up. Or does the official opposition deserve an invitation to sit amongst VIP section or to sit just amongst the regular people in the audience and do not participate? But that's all arguments and that you can bring up later on. But yeah, it's not important. But I just want to say they might not have been invited. And if you weren't invited, you should not attend.
Yeah. Well, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'm just not going there with you today.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
I guess bringing it up. Make sure it's on the radio.
Yeah, discussions which took place. For me, missed opportunity on the orange economy. The discussion from my perspective that was brought by the Bahamas should have been deeper, should have been more substantive. And I think a more fulsome participation in the actual conference itself for members of this particular arena of our economy should have been evident. Didn't see that.
And I embrace what you said. I expected more, but then we need to appreciate what more is. A number of behemoths, especially the artists there, said they were just content and happy to be on stage. The two or three who was able to perform at the ceremony and the concert they had afterwards. And then we would have to determine whether that was adequate
or hold on. But that's fine. But that's a totally different thing, right? The conference was about business.
And expanding
business opportunity and trade, not performance.
And then you remember that we have a musician union, maybe two of them, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if even they were invited to the table to say, how can I participate in this and promote the Bahamas in terms of trade and opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
But those who were invited to participate to the concert.
Okay.
And there are times people say that is good enough, that you were able to play and promote the Bahamas through music. But I understand it's a trade show, and I understand that the opportunity of having UBI, University of the Bahamas, having a forum for itself to promote the opportunities for partnering with universities in Africa, to understand that the union, musician union, could have had a forum for itself,
mm-hmm.
to understand that this is the type of music that we have. These are the type of CDs. Let's network with this Afrobeat, right? The biggest music inside the world at this present time, to say this is what you can actually promote in your country. We're willing to send a team of Bahamas, contingent of Bahamians to Africa and tour Africa for a year. Can you imagine if we had networked Bahamian musicians to be in Africa, touring Africa for a year.
We don't know exposing. That. No. We don't know that those networking didn't take place because
we don't know anything.
We could
that's my point.
But the point you make, which I think to keep it within the four walls of the conference, is the actual presence there. I thought that would have added a layer or a flavor on it on the whole thing, because one of the things which I find very, very interesting is that this particular institution carves out a large portion of its capital and its money for investing in the orange economy, which is unusual. It is very taking some very non-traditional approaches, and I think we could have benefited more if we didn't, but possibly at least having those conversations. You know, why are you in this space? Why are you doing this? What are the opportunities for us? How can we do this? It's about equipment. It's about trading at a technical level, exchanging, so on and so forth.
But we can at least commend our government and the Exim Bank, Afri-Exim Bank, for committing to getting a $2 million+ grant to develop the Grand Bahama, where the plaza, but the bazaar. They're about to invest in that, where they can have African goods to be able to be sold at the bazaar. And then the Bahamians can come and join them too if they wish.
Yes, and they did provide a loan financing for the Bahamas Development Bank, which I think is quite timely and significant. If nothing else, it signals that Afri-Exim Bank is serious about its participation with the Bahamas. And so, the loan which was given and some other were they agreements or memorandum of understanding, not quite remembering at this point in time, but some things were done with the Bahamas. The Prime Minister was on stage, Minister Alkitis was on stage, lots of persons were on stage, and things were done which I think will augur well for the benefit of the Bahamas. But
something to celebrate, just having our Prime Minister on stage speaking on that level at this esteem. And like I said, the Minister, even the Ambassador to Ghana, and I think the Minister for Grand Bahama also spoke.
I'm not going to let you get away with that one, because, the Prime Minister speaks higher than that. The Prime Minister speaks at the United Nations, at the global events, and so on and so forth. So, you know, contextually, yes, it was important. But the Prime Minister, I've been to other places.
Yes. Higher places. I understand that. I'm just good to see him there in our hometown, speaking at that level amongst these people for possible trade and also selling the Bahamas for opportunities. It was good to know.
And delivering very, very good. The Deputy Prime Minister, too, I heard his presentation on, it was Friday. I think he gave a presentation on Friday. It was a bit of a welcome, but he did take the opportunity to lean in, like, really deep. It was an interesting moment for me because he was given a small space within the context of all that was happening, right? Not a lot of time. And, you know, maybe some other persons would go up there and say, welcome, da-da-da-da-da. He leaned in, and he leaned in hard and say, hey, look here, you know, I am not going to mince any words. We are here. We're ready to do business. The Caribbean is open. The Bahamas is open. You know, he gave a story about flying over, coming from a Caribbean country, flying over the Bahamas, going to Miami, and then taking a 35-minute flight back to the Bahamas. I thought that was instructive. And he really kind of rolled out the carpet by saying, you know, we're ready and we're open for business and we're raring to go. And we are, you know, good participants. And there's a lot to do. There's a lot to begin from both sides. So, you know, let's have this dance.
And people need to appreciate that the Bahamas is the gateway to the new world, the gateway to the United States, gateway to even South America. And I think China, I think Africa, I think Dubai is aware of our proximity and the importance of our proximity. Mm-hmm. And I think all of these countries, in terms of their trade shows, are willing and eager to see how they can mesh, how they can seek opportunity. But it's up to us to showcase the best of what the Bahamas can offer and what we can partner with, right? To see what goods and services they have available and what goods and services that we have available and that how we can best export the Bahamas. We are in the business of tourism, right? It's our premier industry. I'm not seeing any other thing.
One of the business that we're in is tourism.
Well, what are the business?
We're in the business of financial services, which was it's not a smaller thing. I think
what percentage?
You don't go by percentage. Oftentimes we talk about percentages, right? And you know, if you're going to talk about absolute percentage, obviously you're going to win this battle very easily. But when we lean into financial services, when we look at the level of salaries versus elsewhere, when we look at the level of interactions with international location, when we look at the opportunities, like for example, you know, financial service was one of the big discussions which was taking place. And I remember one guy, I think he's from an institution called Access Bank, right? And he was literally saying, look, you know, some of the problems that we've been hearing that you're having in the Bahamas, we can fix those because Africa is like way ahead in terms of its digital payment system and so on and so forth. And one of the things he said which struck me and remained with me, he said, when we go into a market, we become like the market. We know the market. We act like the market. We live like the market. And that for me was uber, uber refreshing. So, you know, it's there are huge opportunities out there. And I'm hoping that out of this conference, you know, big things will happen for the Bahamas. But the question is, you know, are we ready to make these things happen?
And I hear the question, and the question is valid, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to do some introspection. And when I say we, leaders and the trailblazers of various industries that we have, right, to say, hey, this is what we can offer and how and what we need to take us to the next level. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the digital market in terms of the issues we have with trading and doing business. Because I know in Kenya, Kenya don't necessarily use money. They use their phone to purchase things. Mm-hmm. And we are still struggling to get sand dollar online and working and embraced by the Bahamian people and doing general business. Yeah. And so perhaps they can come here and help us solidify the transition in terms of doing that. And then that's some conversation we need to have, right?
And this represents,
they already proved that they can do it.
Yeah, this represents huge opportunity because obviously they're not just going was inside here and do it, right? They're going to come here and they'll be partnering with local entrepreneurs. But imagine that level of knowledge transfer and using technology and processes which are already proven, millions and millions of people in Kenya and in other areas of Africa, some of them very, very rural and remote, which have proven these payment processes. And imagine we taking that, spreading it across the 700 islands and keys. Shouldn't be too hard. I think the technology that we have on the side is relatively good for that. And so, there could be some good things coming out, this type of a get-together. And of course, we saw many persons from the Caribbean. I met Mia Motley, which was a good thing. Just a quick story. The day before, I said to Ambassador Andrew Wilson, you think I could give this lady, Mia Motley, one of my books? You think that's possible? Didn't get an answer from him. I'm sitting down in the conference hall, and one mind said, look behind you. And I look behind me, and who is sitting right there behind me? Miss Mia Motley. And so I took the book out of my bag, I autographed it, sent a little message to her, and tell her to continue to lead the people with consciousness and change minds, gave it to her, and she was kind enough to take it. And she took it, shook my hand, she said, this is yours? I said, yes, that's mine. Because she saw bending on it, and automatically she realized, this man ain't from no real Africa, right? So she had to ask me if, that's mine. Yeah, so that was one of the moments for me, a good moment. But the fact that I think there was simultaneously a Caribbean event, I can't remember the name of it, but there was a Caribbean event taking place simultaneously. And we have the big shots, we have the big hitters like Mia Motley, the guy from Guyana, so on and so forth. I think it was a good thing for the Bahamas at that time.
We are definitely a melting pot, and we see the importance of trading, negotiating, having good relations with the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. You call Mia Motley, she's a star of the Caribbean right now. I could call P.J. Patterson.
Yeah, P.J. Patterson was there.
Yeah.
And the former president of Nigeria.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of opportunity. But I can imagine what UB could have done or should have done or will do, negotiating and partnering with these African states, right, to have persons in our university be able to get access to that education.
There was some mention.
So that trade show, I was hoping, and I'm hoping that it will happen.
Yeah, but there was some mention, not to cut you too much, but there was some mention, I think, by the Prime Minister about, taking the opportunity to create scholarships between the Bahamas and different places in Africa.
Yeah, man. And even the Caribbean, if that's even possible.
Yep.
I think that's the new way and the gateway in terms of what can be done, what should be doing.
Yeah.
All right? And to me just now, it's a wait game, a watch and wait game to see how long it takes. Is it something that could be done in 6 months, something that could be done in a year, something that may take 6 years to do? Right? But the talk and the conversation is there.
No. And I think that's the difference with this conference, right? They have started, they came here, they gave us money, they started to lend us money. They've set up a shop in Barbados. They're doing some things down in Grand Bahama in terms of the bazaar. It has started. The question is, how do we expand that? So, this one, I think, is a little bit different. It's not a waiting game. This is really about persons looking actively at how monies can be made, how wealth can be created. And of course, it's about, we now have to be smart as to how we glean benefit from that whole process.
Yes. And like you mentioned earlier, the Bahamas Development Bank got a loan. Right, we know that that's the premier institution in terms of projects and development by small businesses here.
Right.
So hopefully, and willing, hopefully, Bahamas will take advantage of the opportunities there, the monies that the extra monies that is now made available to Bahamas. And even separate from that, right, this administration is known for giving more access to entrepreneurs and businesses. So with the extra money from the Bahamas Development Bank, the various projects that can be done, we must be positive and say, hey,
Yeah.
Is it possible?
It's going to happen. Something will happen. The extent to which we exploit it to the fullest is kind of what I'm looking at, not just for the Bahamas, but certainly right across the Caribbean. The commitment is there. Setting up office in Barbados, making the commitments, signing the MOUs, the ones which related to the Caribbean. Obviously, it's a signal that something is possible. But, you know, taking this idea of a global Africa, which includes all of Africa and everybody else out there in the African diaspora, I think is a wonderful thing and something which we need to build on. It's refreshing. It's different. My experience there was, it was really so easy. If you wanted to, just to walk up to anybody and, you know, start a conversation. It was like talking to family. And that, I think, for me personally, made a difference.
Yes. And one thing about the conference was, and you hinted towards it, the availability of the Africans and even by the Caribbean people there, mm-hmm. the availability to of them to speak and for you to engage and for you to, for lack of a better word, sell yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I understand it was a trade show and an expose of what Africa can offer. And I think that it should be an opportunity of what we can offer, even for the Caribbean and for all those other nations that was there. I think it was 9 African states that was present, if I'm not mistaken. And they could have seen opportunities, say, well, this could fit well in my country. I wonder how I could partner with this person. Let me get this business card there. So it being a trade show, and we need to take advantage of more trade shows, attend more trade shows. I know
it wasn't a trade show.
We went to Dubai. We went to Africa. We went to China and their trade shows. So hopefully there'll be more trade shows that we can take advantage of where we can highlight the Bahamas. Uh-huh. Where we can explain what the orange economy is, where how we can benefit it, where we can explain and intertwine the orange economy in our tourism product and take advantage of the various opportunities there.
Okay. Yeah, it took on kind of the nature of a trade show to some extent. It wasn't a trade show.
It was the Afri-Caribbean trade show. It's in the name.
It was the bank having its annual general meeting, to be honest, to a large part. And then, you know, I think spread it out and using that wonderful opportunity to do so many other things. And then the other conference, which was running simultaneously, can't remember the name, but overall, I believe it was, you know, a wonderful thing. I had a very wonderful experience there. I thought the Bahamians who participated showed up very well in one or two instances, expected just a little bit more. But, overall showed up very well, represented the country very well, and, you know, spoke eloquently about what, you know, some of the opportunities are or some of the things that we're looking to do. So, yes, Nuri, this is what we wanted to talk about. We're going to wrap up in a few. So, you're the last word.
Yeah, man. Like I said, it was a great opportunity. And it was great to see the Bahamas showcasing. It was great to see so many people eager and excited to see the Africans who were present. There are a number of Afrocentric people in the Bahamas, the Rastafarian group, the various religious group, mm-hmm. Business partners who are eager to trade with Africa. I was hoping that they would be present to say, hey, and to see and be inspired to say, hey, all my work that I've been doing is not in vain because Africa is calling us home. Mm-hmm. The song that you played earlier, you said, you think you could take Mama Africa from we again? No, the idea is we are reconnecting. Yes. Africa is calling us home. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a great return? And it's up to us now to facilitate this great return.
Yeah, and so let's follow the route of the Black Star Liner from Garvey to Kwame Nkrumah. Let's follow the contribution that passed straight through the Bahamas, Chogham, and the call by the former Prime Minister, Sir Lyndon Pinlin. The participation of Cuba, our Caribbean sister, in Angola, which impacted and touched on the apartheid movement in South Africa, which then led to the freedom of Nelson Mandela and the opening up of South Africa. So, you know, in many ways, the road to Africa passed through the Caribbean, passed through the Bahamas. And when we think about this whole idea of Pan-Africanism, the most essential human being in that whole discussion is Marcus Garvey, the one who is most celebrated. But of course, if you are a research individual, you will understand and you would have known that one of his mentor, maybe his main mentor, was Robert Love, which started right here in the Bahamas. So one could make an argument that the Pan-Africanist movement, as espoused by Garvey, started in the Bahamas. And so we look forward to see what comes out of this and how we can tie those connections together for the benefit of all of those in the African diaspora, and certainly, as they have coined it, global Africa. Sesa Nuri, thank you so much for joining.
It was definitely a pleasure, and thanks very much for inviting me on your show again.
Yeah, man, always. So we're going to take ourselves a break here, and when we come back, we're going to switch up the conversation just a little bit and ask ourselves the question, how are we having the conversations that we are having, and whether or not those conversations, the way we're having them, are imposing a cost on us or will impose a cost on us in the future. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. Don't move. Come right back.
On the go, miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Them said them think they take too long to grow and start to cuss her. I couldn't trust them and those as a chose her. Such is life, them say I just hurt. I take a shot, I swear them call this Squatterland. Some say fi government, some say fi Matterland. Still no one share a load, them got a lot of land. Them want be done a gun range and shot a land. Rasta tell them all the why. Stop war and go till the side. Stop fighting for land and all. So many go divine. Slave master spit in an face. Them take that with a smile. The bones of the Nile. So mild and so fertile. Acres more than
And welcome back to The Essentials as we listen to I Win. I love to see my people living in love. We had a good conversation with CNUri just now, and we're making a switch. And this one is a little bit more technical. I think requires careful thought, so we won't have anybody else here with us to discuss it. I want to be able to manage this by myself. But I think it's an important thing to speak about. I really think we do owe ourselves the obligation to stop some time and pause and ask ourselves some very, very important questions. Are we advancing ourselves as individuals or small groupings, or are we advancing us as a country, a collective? So before I go into this whole discussion, I need to get a couple of things straight because, you know, persons sometimes tend to totally misinterpret what you're saying. And, you know, if persons want to call in, certainly I'll give them an opportunity to speak. But sometimes people misunderstand you. They don't know where you're coming from. They don't know what you're motivated by. And so the easiest thing is for them to kind of just label you. And by labeling you, they diminish you. And that's the end of that. So let me say this. It's important. It's absolutely important, regardless of what your political views are. It's important for this administration to be successful. I want this administration to be successful. You should want this administration to be successful. If you understand what is at play, if you understand the kind of a future which is at risk, you would want that. Now, that doesn't translate in you want them to win the next time or you want the other side to win. It doesn't, that statement doesn't translate into any of that. That is your personal political views. What I'm trying to entreat you to do is to think about not any grouping, not any individual, but country. Because country ultimately bears the cause of everything which is done within. Or, you know, celebrate the gains. So the achievements is ultimately augurs to the benefit of country, and bad decisions will affect country. So yes, we want them to be successful. And from my personal perspective, there are one or two persons there who were colleagues or friends even before politics. And so definitely from a personal level, want those persons to be successful. But that's their business. That's what they choose to do, and they know how to do that best. I am here choosing to do this, and I'm hoping that I can add some value to this whole idea of national growth, national development. It's an experiment. We're trying to become the best that we can. I hope this brings value. I had a meeting, I was at a meeting once, just at the start of this administration with the Prime Minister. At the time, I was with the Chamber of Commerce. And so persons usually go and have a chat with the Prime Minister, tell him what some of our goals are, some of the things that we like to see, and he would too share. I was sitting down there. I am not the leader of that particular entity at the time. You know, we had our chair, deputy chair, and so they were taking the lead. And so I was just sitting quietly listening. And somewhere in the room, it's almost like in a mid-stride, the Prime Minister shifted and said to me, "Brother Edwards, what's happening?" And I was a little bit shook up a little bit because maybe I wasn't paying 100% attention, to be honest. A little bit distracted. There was somebody over on the other side who was trying as hard as possible not to fall asleep. And I was kind of really into that for a moment, yeah? So that kind of distracted me. But when he said that, kind of jerked me back to life. And I said, "Well, no, everything is fine, sir. Good to be here. Yada, yada, yada. What are your thoughts?" And I shared this with him. I said, "You know, I think you are elected at an important time. an important time in the history of the country. And it's very, 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 very critical. I didn't use all of those very, but it's very critical that you're successful. Because if you are not successful, there's going to be a price to be paid. I said that then. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if anybody else around the table remember. I think they should. I did say that. And I said that then. I believe that. And I believe it now. What drove that particular statement was we're coming out of COVID. We had lost like maybe 20, 25%, some large number of the economy. Things were uncertain. There was high inflation. There was Russia was beating up on Ukraine. All sorts of stuff was happening. We anticipated and we talk about the pent-up demand, but nobody really truly knew what exactly was going to happen. But it was said against that backdrop that, hey, given the concentration of things which took place, the buildup of debt, the additional costs and so on, if we don't fix some things in this five-year segment, there's going to be a cost to be paid later on. Now, some good things have happened. We had a significant reconsolidation of the economy. Some good things happened, better than expected. But that statement still rings true in a number of ways, and I'm going to discuss that with you in a bit. So the issues here are not confined to any one party, any one grouping. It's really about the perspective I want to take it from is, one, we need the Bahamas to win. Two, therefore, the administration need to be successful. And one of the things that we must understand, if you want to slide down the political side, understand this. Any administration that leads this country, let's say tomorrow morning the FNM is leading the country. The challenges which are being faced today in this moment, this very moment, is going to be faced by them. If they win in the next 6 months or 1 year, the same holds true. And the question, therefore, is how are you going to manage it? I'm not saying that they can't, nor they don't know how. The point I'm trying to make simply is that they, like this administration, will have to grapple with the exact same issues. And oftentimes, when one administration demits office, the next administration very, very early will tell you, and smartly so, that the problem that you thought you had is bigger than you can even think about. So usually there's a level of reality check that comes to bear, and we better understand what the issues are. It's part of the whole political process. So, you know, if I make it really, really bad, hopefully an accurate description of what is, then you can better understand what I have to deal with and what are some of the decisions which I have to make. They may be odd, but you may better understand that. But where we are currently as an economy, despite the good things which have happened, is happening and expect to be happening, especially in tourism, we're not out of the woods. We are absolutely not out of the woods. And there are some things which we do in our daily discourse which may have unintended consequences. And I don't think in that regard we are always careful enough about that particular aspect of our national life. So recently we had a budget presentation. And as the budget goes, it's supposed to provide us with a guide as to what's going to happen over the next 3-4 years, even though we focus on 1 year. The budget is really a projection of 3 years down the line. And so we have had multiple discussion and multiple issues came up in the budget. I'm not going to zero in on anything. That's not where I'm going. I'm just talking about how we've dealt with it. Here is my view. If after you have had a budget debate, there are things which are left unclear, there's something wrong with the debate. It's incomplete. even though the time allotted is done, it's incomplete. It's not effective. It wasn't efficient. And in this particular budget, there are some things like that. What we need really going forward, because you can't unjump, you can't unwhistle. We need some straight talk. We need to have clear honesty. And I'm not saying anybody's lying. I want you to work with me because I can build on this. We need to have transparency. And we need, most importantly, to start to have some big picture thinking on all sides, including all citizens and residents. And the big picture thinking that I am proposing is, let's think about how our words are translated in the public domain, but even more importantly, outside the borders of the Bahamas. Let's think about persons who are listening to us without any type of a emotional connection, philosophical leaning. They're just sitting out there and very objectively soaking up the words that we speak. But they're not unconnected. They have interests. They're lenders. They're investors. They're individuals who have been looking at the country and trying to make a decision, have made a decision, have an interest to protect. Let's think big picture. And then let's ask ourselves, the way in which we are discussing the business at hand, is that communicating to those entities, to those individuals, to those organizations, is that communicating confidence? Is that saying we have it together? Is that saying we are being upfront and transparent? Because while it may not be a lie, while no one is setting out to be directly dishonest, the way we argue a particular issue could be so construed. And therein lies some of the challenges that we're having. Also, the way we choose to communicate issues, and now, you know, I'm a little bit of a fundamentalist as far as this is concerned. I believe that national issues are supposed to be led by fundamental discussions, not the politics thereof. But I do understand, having grown to over 6 foot in many years, I'm not naive. I understand the business of the politics. I understand that there are persons out there in a competitive arena politically fighting to either hold a position or gain a position. So I'm not going to diminish that. It is a part of our existence, and it's necessary. It's necessary because this whole idea of democracy that we pursue requires that. That's a natural offshoot, if you will, an enabler of the whole democratic process. Somebody have to show themselves capable of stepping to the fore or holding the gate, so to speak. But oftentimes, if we fail to become fundamental in our discussion, we diminish the quality of the conversation. We diminish the value. And the people who are listening to us are not hearing what they're listening for. All they may be hearing is blah, 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 blah. So the budget has been read. There have been multiple discussions. Here is where I want to start on this. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so we need to get through this quickly. Here's where I want to start with this. The persons who have the privilege of writing the speeches, some of the speeches, not all, but the persons who have the privilege of writing some of these speeches for politicians, member of parliament, but persons in the House of Assembly primarily, I think they need to pay more attention to what is being delivered. How is it being delivered? with the greatest respect, I don't want anyone to feel I'm disrespecting them. The persons who have the privilege of writing the speeches for the Prime Minister, I think sometimes need to step back and ask themselves some big questions. Because when the Prime Minister speaks, whatsoever it is that the Prime Minister says needs to be taken as near gospel. How the Prime Minister says it is important and critical. And I understand you. You're doing your job. You have this very, very, very almost vicious balance. Because your people are politics. But you're also people in charge of running a country. And the same would hold for the minister, not a minister, the opposition leader, yeah? Whosoever writes for these individuals need to bear that in mind, that there has to be an appreciation, a very clear appreciation of the informational value, the messaging that comes out of what is said and what is not said. So at the end of the day, some persons find the budget process to be boring. Someone like me, pure excitement. I will listen to every single word which has been said. I don't listen to every single part of the sectoral debate, but certainly not going to miss the Prime Minister, not going to miss the Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister, not going to miss the Minister in charge of financial services, Minister in charge of agriculture, the big ones, if you will. Minister of Foreign Affairs. You want to hear what's happening because those are where some of the big policies come from. Certainly, in today's life in the Bahamas, minister responsible for energy. Big one. So how these things are being said is very, very critical to the whole process. Because at the end of the day, they have to be distilled down to this one word, my one word, believability. There's some guys out there someplace, a group of people huddling in a room, reading the document, listening to what has been said, and they're just asking themselves, whether consciously or unconsciously, do we believe? Do we believe? Now, you may argue with me, and you may very well be able to win because, you know, you're smarter than me. That's fine. And you will say, well, you know, no one is trying to mislead anyone here. And I accept that. I'll accept that straight off the bat. True, we're not going down that particular rabbit hole. But it don't matter. It doesn't matter. My fundamental question is, after you have said what you said, do those people find it credible? Believability. And why is it that that is important? Let me give an example. So last year in the budget, the projected surplus for 24-25 this year was supposed to be $109 million, $109.2 million. Again, we often get caught up with the budget because we look at it in terms of a single year, but it's not that. Basically, we said to the markets, we are going to move our circumstance down, and this year we are going to make a profit, for want of a better word, for persons out there who don't fully understand it. We're going to move into a surplus. We're going to spend less than we take in. Now, circumstances change. We all understand that. So what happened this year is the projection for that same period, obviously with better information, because we're now right on the doorstep of 24-25. But the number this year is a deficit of 169, which is a turn around of 109 and 69, that's 78, of $178 million. Now, when you think about that from the perspective of a credit rating, for example, you told the individual that you're going to be in a position to better manage and pay for your debt. And then this year, it changes. But when you look very carefully at the overall discussion around that aspect, you don't get the fundamentals. You don't hear about the why and wherefore and how they're going to be compensating aspects of that. It's not a matter of whether or not we'll be able to pay back our loans. We will. The country will. It's a question of the view which has been taken by those who either watch or lend to us. Now, you can argue with me, and you may be able to say, well, you know, maybe Edwards don't know what he's talking about, but let me use our two debt, which is listed as a proxy for this argument. Since the reading of the budget, there's been a decline in or an increase in the discount, however way you want to look at it. The market sees those debt as cheaper. And they were, at some point in time, they were kind of down in the dumps going through COVID. I think they were as low as 51%. And we recovered nicely. All things being equal, they're not terribly bad at this moment. They're not terribly bad. One is in the 80s and one is at 93, I think. But the issue is that they're declining. And they've started to decline since around May time, certainly into June. The question is, why? I'm not making a hard conclusion, but if after the reading of a budget, if after you send out your best message, your bonds turn in the opposite direction, we need to then step back and ask ourselves the question, what exactly is it that we communicated? And I think the issue is that in this whole process of communicating to the market, we're saying some things often which we here in the Bahamas may readily get, but some persons don't understand it. Like one of the mistakes, I think, which was made in the budget this year, in the budget presentation this year, was to kind of carve out the discussion around energy, BPL, and to do that at a different time. And then when it was done, it led to a series of unfolding of information with questions being asked and explanations had to be explained and so on and so forth. The market gets very jittery with stuff like that. And my argument here is, I'm not trying to knock the administration, and I'm not trying to knock anything that was contributed by the opposition or whosoever did that. What I'm trying to say is, we need to start to think about how we might be impacting the country. And consequently, the information which we lead with needs to be as fulsome as possible, as clear as possible, and it must stand up to the most rugged scrutiny as is possible. The moment you start to have wavering, it sends a message, and it comes down at the end of the day to believability. We have to get to the place where we understand, and by we, I mean every single one of us who lives in this country and who has an interest in its success. I certainly do. And I could make the argument that if I do, you should. So we have to do this because, you know, in the public, it becomes fodder for persons to take things which have been said or not said and to expand them and to speculate and all of a sudden the information which is out there is you're not sure what is wrong or what is right. So we have to bear that in mind. And so I am going to be so bold this evening, may get myself in trouble, but let's see how it goes. I'm going to be so bold as to say those who write for these individuals, step back. Ask yourself some questions. Ask yourself some of the inquisitive questions which eventually get asked in the public, get asked by the opposition, get asked by the newspapers. The same should hold true that when the opposition members make presentation, the same questions which are asked by the party in power, by the press, by the individuals within society, somebody needs to do more of that. We need to become a little bit more critical and fundamental in how we think. Because leaning too hard on the politics of the moment, the thing which sounds good, the thing which sells well or sells easily, does not always translate to a fulsome understanding of the issues. As a matter of fact, oftentimes it takes away because it demands later the fulsome explanation. And in the fulsome explanation, oftentimes new information spills over. And then the question is, should you not have told me that upfront one time? And the reason you may not have is because you wanted to reduce it to this bite-sized explanation or bite-sized statement. So we have to think about that. We also have to think about those persons who advise. Those persons who advise, I think, have an obligation to the beneficiary of the advice to be fulsome, to be forthcoming, and to be very, very sometimes sound in what they do and what they say. I have had the opportunity sometime, unfortunate opportunity, to listen to discussion or to observe discussion and sometimes participate in discussions where individuals very, very clearly lay out a position which from Jump Street to me just don't make no sense. And then a couple of things happen. Within the sphere of the discussion, there are persons who don't say anything. They're just quiet. They may know that it don't make sense. I don't know. I can't read their mind. They just don't say anything. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, why are you not saying anything? Because you can't believe this to be true. You can't believe this to be accurate. And me being who I am, I don't agree. Sometimes you get rap across the head, but that's part of the life. But when you raise these things, right, it's not simply because, you know, you feel that you have a greater commitment to raising it or anything. It's out of a recognition that those conversations are started and they often escalate. And in my mind, I think they reach to the seat of power and inform discussions. And those informed discussions, because the foundation, the fundamentals of what is discussed is uninformed, wrong in some instances, the pronouncement that you hear, the vibe that comes back to you, become problematic. And so what I'm saying here is simply this. If we're going to advise or share information or whatever it is that we do when we have these opportunities and privileges, we need to make sure that they're fundamental. We need to make sure that they're sound. We need to make sure that they're honest. We need to make sure that we're not slighting information in such a way for any personal benefit of any individual or grouping, because the country is at risk ultimately. We also need to understand and appreciate that sometimes, we speak to individuals who do not fully understand or readily appreciate the nuances of some of the things that we speak of. And so we need to be careful and diligent in ensuring that if we are not the mouthpiece of delivering those things eventually, that the persons who do understand it. So if you ask me something, I don't care which side of the divide you're on. If you ask me something, I will tell you. I will share the information I have. If I don't know, I'm going to tell you straight up, I don't know. But if I do share, don't expect me to put it in a nice, neat package which sounds something like a soundbite you can go throw at some person. That won't happen. My first obligation is to you, the individual, because I really don't want any person who is in a leadership position in this country to be stepping out if I had the privilege of giving them some information and to make a fool of themselves. That's wrong. That's not good. It doesn't speak well, augurs well for a country. And that is my lens. But I also should have a commitment to the individual I'm interacting with and know that I need to be good to that person, to be honest, not to give them wrong information. And if somehow it looks like I subsequently discover something wasn't quite right, I have an obligation to go back very quickly and make sure that that is amended. That is a way to go. I believe that we have to get to the place where we start thinking about how we are affecting the conversation about the Bahamas, outside of the Bahamas. It may take place inside, yes, but by interests which can be regarded as being outside of the Bahamas. So our conversations, yeah, we have them every single day. But they're not domestic totally. They're not just for our consumption. They're for persons who are out there watching, gleaning information, comparing and contrasting, and they don't forget anything we say. So when we tell them that we are going to jump next year, and then this year we say we are going to sit down, that becomes a contrast. Why is that so? Because if you tell me you're going to jump and I believe you, it creates an expectation. And I do some things based on that expectation. And if then this year you turn around and say, well, I'm sitting, then obviously some things change. I have to look at you differently so I can make a choice. Yes, I believe you when you said that. I acted accordingly. I'm now believing you again, but I have to change my mind. I have to change the things I've done. I have to take a different view. I have to take a different look. So where are we? How are we going to manage and marshal information coming out of important exercises like the budget? What comes out of the budget is fundamental for the management of the country. It's fundamental for investors looking in the country. It's fundamental for the credit market to take a view of what the country is about. So when, for example, we have discussions around the operation of institutions and what they do and what they didn't do, and that type of a discussion isn't fundamental, isn't accurate. The person is saying, well, you know, these are the persons who lead us or lead them. It's them, it's not me. They lead us, me and you. So those persons are thinking, these are the person who lead them, and they're demonstrating that type of an understanding or lack of understanding of what the fundamental issues are. That becomes problematic. It becomes problematic because the view shifts. And when the view shifts, there are decisions which are going to be based on those views. And the issue is, if nothing happened, then, you know, we could all have a jolly time and, you know, tell me some, don't tell me some, speak about what took place in an inaccurate way, demonstrate lack of understanding if you on the other side, the opposition side, you know, just, you know, oppose for the sake of oppose rather than be fundamental in your opposition. We could do whatsoever it is that we want to do if there was no cause. The problem is that there is a cause to bear. It's inescapable. if we get it wrong, when we get it wrong. And so right now, as we speak, the country has done pretty well coming out of COVID, having all of the issues with the global pandemic. And we celebrate that. But we are still grappling with our debt circumstances. And I keep saying this, and I've been saying this for many, many moons now. And I've said that this is going to be one of the most significant issues to grapple with. It's not doom and gloom. We're not at a place where we're going to crash and burn. I want you to understand that. But there are difficulties. And the difficulties that we're having with our debt, if one should sit back and reflect, look at the information, look at the things which have been done, because we always have to assume that things have been done for the right reasons. A lot of them are being impacted by our inability to fund our problems, or fund our challenges, to remediate it based solely out of the immediate pocket. Even if that will come from taxes at some point in time, but out of the immediate pocket of the government. And as long as that is the case, then certain decisions are going to be constrained. We may find ourselves being forced more and more into making decisions which ultimately become more expensive for the country. The extent to which the government, for example, at this point in time, can afford capital expenditure has a very low ceiling. There's no question about that. And this administration, like previous administration, have very creatively sought to find ways of doing so. In this particular budget, it was about public-private partnership. It was about having government guarantees and looking for agencies which give concessionary funding. Those were the three broad things which came out of this particular budget. In any time, any day, shape, or form, nothing wrong with those, right? Absolutely nothing wrong with those. Those could be used at any particular point in time. But the emphasis is really in this particular budget, in this particular season, the emphasis is on the fact that these must be more pronounced because there is a struggle on the side of the government to find finances easily. It therefore means that what we're saying to the market, we have a caller. Let's say this call very quickly. Caller, go ahead. Caller, go ahead. You are on essential. Yeah. Quickly, you have 2 minutes.
Boy, that was a long listening. Could you do this in the end? That's how you know it.
Yeah, I'm good. So go quickly because we don't have much time.
I understand. I've been doing you for about a half an hour. But anyway,
I am sorry.
God bless you. You know, Mr. Edwards, one of the biggest things I find out going on in my country, when I say my country, I love the Commonwealth of the Bob Islands, born there in 1951. There are too many people, I believe, coming to my country to tell my country and my leaders how we should live.
Okay, thank you.
Now, why are you walking me off?
Because I'm not going there today, Sparky. I'm not. What I'm about today is very serious. You know, it's not something easy to do. You don't just come here and plop in this chair and have this type of a conversation. You know, you have to be serious about it. You have to be committed. Every single time you come, you talk about who telling you what. It's not about that. It's about how we move a country, regardless of where the people coming from, regardless of where the information coming from. If it's fundamental and sound, useful, and can bring value, it should be heard. So where were we? I'm saying to you that at the end of the day, we have to be mindful that the body of information that we put out, when scrutinized, is going to tell a positive story about the Bahamas. And I'm not saying that all of the things that we speak about are going to be positive. They are going to include challenges, and we should talk about that, and we should distill those very, very clearly, very openly, very honestly. But when we take the totality of the discussion, especially around a budget exercise, the end product must be positive. So it highlights the issues, it highlights the challenges, and the strategies which are laid out for solution make sense. They find consensus. They find support across the divide. That's kind of where we need to get. Because while the difference in ideas make for good discussions and good politicking in many instances, the end result is that the information coming out in the process starts to raise more and more questions. Our job as a collective is to say to the world, we have this entity, the Bahamas, we're running it, we're faced with challenges, inherent risk. We have one eye on a hurricane, whether or not that is going to happen. We don't want any to come true. It's projected to be an active. We understand the risk. We understand if these things happen, then these are the other things which may happen. And here are the strategies that we have employed. But at the end of the day, the sum total of the discussion, including the disagreements, including the subsequent explanation, and then a satisfaction of receiving that explanation, supposed to tell a story. And the story should be that these people understand what they're about. We should not disagree just for the sake of disagreeing. We should not object just for the sake of objecting. We should not knock down just for the sake of knocking down so we can trip up someone. On the other side, we must be fully transparent. We must ensure that the participation is active. We must ensure that there is great responsiveness. We must be moving in a way where we are building consensus. We have to be consensus oriented. We must do and say things and act in a way which can easily be identified as equitable, and there's inclusiveness. We have to keep our eyes on effectiveness and efficiency. And we must operate in such a way where there's accountability. All of those words I just call up, in sum total, is what important organizations defined as good governance. And everybody have a part to play in that. So my message here this evening, to the extent that I've been able to do that, is to say, let us all step back, take a deep breath, and start to rethink about what we do, how we do it, and whether or not we're doing it in the best interest of the Bahamas. That may be our intent. Oftentimes it is. But the question, though, is what is the final output? And if the final output does not do that, then we have to reassess. I think sometimes when the issues become fundamental, they always are, but when they become a little bit more challenging, the discussions need to become deeper, they need to become wider, they need to become clearer, and they need to become more accommodative. And if we can do that, I believe if we can do that, there's great things to be gained in this whole process. We understand at the end of the day, the competitiveness. We understand the adversarial nature of what is happening. But at the end of the day, I say end of the day a lot today, in the end, it's really about whether or not all that we do is serving the Bahamas in an optimized way. And if we can achieve that, then great things can be achieved. We always end our show by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You've been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. All that is left to be said is walk good, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night.
They say the sun and a shining world, but they in some people's world, it never shine at all. These roads of flames are catching a fire. Ah. Oh, no, 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 no. Baby, tell me where you've gone, gone, gone. I've been feeling for your love so long. We can praise God in the moonlight. Baby, if you with me, better do right. And I've been gone too long. And I'm hoping that you sing my song, my song. I've been on this road for way too long. Fire.